Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're here for 3 episodes of Criminal Minds. And the third one, you should be pretty excited about, because it is an episode of Criminal Minds so bad that it made a person I know who had watched every episode of Criminal Minds never watch another episode of Criminal Minds.
Took her a long time to
give up on him, but she did. And it was all false flag. So, yeah, I can't wait to get there. All right, but let's get right to it. 1307, what's it about?
It's called Dust and Bones. Why, I don't know. When 3 women from Austin, Texas are tortured and disfigured, the BAU sets out to identify a serial abductor obsessed with a venomous creature. Meanwhile, Alves tries to help his former fugitive task force partner come to terms with his paralysis.
Ah, and yes.
Even the Alves part was weak.
Yeah, it's not great. It's just like, you got serious emotional problems, huh? How about a dog? Well, yeah, dog therapy works, but, you know, this is a serious situation, Luke. I know you're trying to help, but... You know.
But he thinks this is the perfect thing. I'm going, no, did you ever think to bring him home to your family?
No, apparently not.
Well, you know, give him a wider context, introduce him to the team.
Yeah, like, come on, guys. Like, a dog is great for emotional support, but his problem is he can't, like, the thing is, fundamentally, Luke, I know you were screwed up coming back from the army. A lot of people are. Not everybody, but a lot, a huge percentage, in fact, are massively screwed up when they come back from the army. It's not an unusual thing. And a dog, you know, a chill dog can help you with that. Although, one of my favorite stories was this guy, I blanket on his name, he was a Democratic veteran, and he was thinking about running for president, but then I believe he was mayor of a small town, well, a mid-sized town, and then he's like, you know what, I'm dropping out of politics because I have PTSD. And he since then has stopped being a politician and just worked full-time with PTSD. And what he was saying was that it's a completely normal thing for guys like me to go and get, because we don't feel safe, to go and get a guard dog, and that was the first thing I did, right? Because I never feel safe in my house. I'm always worried that someone's going to, you know, shoot me in my sleep. And I thought having a guard dog was going to help. But the problem is, a guard dog is a dog with PTSD. It is a dog that is hyper alert. You know? And so as a consequence, the dog is always freaked out about everything, and the last thing you want when you have PTSD is a reason to freak out all the time, and a dog that barks at anything will not make you feel more safe. And so he ended up having to give away his dog because it was, you know, making it so he couldn't sleep. And I'm like, I get why having a dog to care for helped you when coming back, because, you know, the war was so hard on you, especially because of, you know, the special forces going to Mexico and murdering people while you were in the army. Like, it's rough. I completely 100% get that. But how is that going to help a guy who can't walk?
Yeah.
Because fundamentally, you could go home and go back to your life, and it was only your emotions that were stopping you from just going right back to your life. And I don't want to discount how severe emotional damage isn't, but your stuff can be helped by a dog and a therapist. He actually can't walk.
Yeah. And he has to come to terms with the job.
Yep.
He can't do his former job. He has to have a new job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of those things, he's coming to terms with that. And of course, these guys who do the kind of things that they do are, well, you know, I mean, their lives are a little screwed up anyway.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you have to shift and you have to go back to a desk job. Well, they didn't want a desk job ever in their entire lives. It's just a big shift. I mean, anyway, never mind. Luke was trying to do a good thing.
Exactly.
And the guy...
Yeah, it's true. You're right. I mean, Luke is, again, fundamentally a positive character and he wants to help. He just doesn't quite know the best way of going about it.
Well, no, and that's exactly what he said. So he thought getting him someone like his Roxy
would
help. Now, if like if the dog isn't a really a guard dog and you don't train it as a guard dog, because Roxy clearly is not.
No.
You know, you can tell.
She's just a floppy, okay, happy dog, and she's very cute.
Mm-hmm.
Just a happy, happy dog.
And she would have looked good in pink, so what the hell.
That's true. But you're right. The Alvis stuff isn't great, because it's not addressing how unbelievably different their situations were.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you like that Luke is just genuinely trying to help.
To help.
He's not doing the best job, but he's genuinely trying, and thumbs up to you.
Yeah.
Thumbs up
because
to you.
Because this guy had literally inverted, you know, pushed himself away from everybody.
Yeah, exactly. He'd become a complete introvert. Yeah.
Yeah.
Introvert. So, wow.
This dog may end up
helping a lot.
He's got bigger problems, but even a little solution to part of his problem.
Yeah. Is definitely going to feel like positive forward motion, and that's what he needs right now.
Yeah. So Luke did do a good thing.
Absolutely. No. He 100%, I agree, did a good thing. Just, you know, with some caveats.
Yes. Okay.
That there are better stuff he could have done. Let's get to the actual episode, which is the rare murder-free episode of Criminal Minds. Almost never happens. Someone commits suicide by cop, but that's not a murder.
No.
No, not at all. I mean, kind of wish they kept tasers. She wasn't really a threat, but, you know. They like to shoot people, what can I say? So it's a very weird episode, because it's one of those... it's... like, legit one of those ones where this isn't a hard crime to solve at all. Because they find that a woman tells them, right, who comes in with a split tongue. Ugh. The victim's just like, the killer told me that now we look alike. And I saw that she also had a split tongue. And I'm like, how many people are there in the city with a split tongue? 5 tops? Like, there can't be more than 5. And by the way, like, if you've seen, I don't care how dozy you are, if you heard someone's voice and you saw their mouth enough to see their split tongue, you know a woman had taken you hostage. Like, 100%. Yeah. They should have known it was a woman at that second, because the victim could have been able to describe. It's like, you get this weird scene where they kidnap oh my god. I'm now getting so hostile to cops that I refer to them grabbing someone as kidnapping him. I'm terrible. But anyway, they grab this guy out of his tattoo parlor and a place for body modifications. And then they just have him sitting there in the police station, right? Just sitting there in the police station until they have some photos to run by him. And it's like, why don't you just ask this man, who is the craziest person with a split tongue that you know? Like, who is the person with a split tongue who is the most emotionally damaged person? And he would have immediately told them who the kidnapper was.
Yeah.
Because he knew. But they don't ask him any questions. And I'm like, well, why'd you bring him down here then?
Well, because he ran and he has a warrant back in some mother town.
Yeah. But instead they like do this amazing geographic profiling. All of the women were dumped near properties owned by just ask this guy who it is. There cannot be that many people with split tongues in this city.
However,
you just can't.
You see, but then there wouldn't have been an episode. I mean, I hate to say it, but there wouldn't have been an episode.
And it's even worse, because had they just asked, they would have known right away. And then the second time, like, they actually find out that the woman has kidnapped her sister. Like,
yeah.
So it's like, it's really not hard to figure out at all who the kidnapper is this time. So let's focus on the more important part of the episode, the killer's motivation. The killer who had this abusive, neglectful mother who, you know, because she was, 15 when she had her daughter, is almost understandable that she had no idea how to be a parent.
Yeah, but what she did was
abhorrent. Awful. Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah,
so consequently, no. I mean, this was, I mean, that, I mean, if there was
you
ever
don't have a
case...
ton of sympathy for the mother here.
No, and I would say, like, we don't know, didn't they ever take this woman away?
The kid away? Yeah, it's that weird that they hadn't taken, yeah, they. I feel like if there's a report, because there were reports of her abusing the kid, I feel like she had to have been in foster care at some point. Then the mother got her back when she got her life together and was involved in a relationship and had her second daughter. I feel like in that period, she must have like went to, you know, child services and gotten her kid back. Like the timeline of that, I think, makes sense.
Well, no. I know that somehow or another it makes sense, but she went out and did the same thing, which is obviously had a child like that, like it. To me, it doesn't ring. She went out and then she got herself pregnant again and had another child and did a really great job. And this child is perfect in every way.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I don't buy that for a, I don't buy this episode for a minute.
Well, no, it's, I mean, and the weird part is if she had gotten gotten married and settled down that way, I would have bought the stability of the second daughter way more than I do.
And right. The anger of the first daughter.
Exactly, right? You know, because she's got this half-sister that has the idyllic life, you know, that she wished she had. But if she's still a single mother, how is she, like, providing so much better for these now two kids?
Given her job. No, not
given that her job
that.
Is, like,
and
is
she
a
says
job
she
that
did...
you're never home. Sorry, real estate agents are never home. It is a non-stop hustle.
Yeah.
Like, that job is 100% just constant hustling. And if you want to be the best real estate agent, you basically are never with your family.
And then, she doesn't talk about her two daughters. She only talks about this one daughter. Well, you know, don't tell me that she had changed her attitude towards the first daughter.
If she's not even mentioning her in a fluff piece about Woman of the Year. I know.
Yeah, you know, I'm going,
no, right.
I have no sympathy for this woman. I feel sorry for the child. No.
The half-sister you feel sorry for. Absolutely.
She treated the half-sister. I don't even think this half-sister really knew her because there's 10 years, I guess, between them.
There's a 10-year difference. So by the time she starts having, you know, real complex memories and awareness of the world is 5 or 6. And so her older sister is basically out the door. By the time this girl is aware of people's relationships to one another
and
in a more complex way.
And that the mother locked her in a place with snakes.
I know, locked her in a shed.
What, she was hoping the snakes would bite her and she would die?
Maybe. I mean, there is a lot of people who, there is an unfortunately large amount of people who are bad parents who hope their kid will... accidentally, I mean, even if it's just subconsciously, have something bad happen to them and it takes away their responsibility. Let's just say I would question how many of the kids who get killed in boiling cars are 100% accidents.
Yeah, I would question
it. I mean, and I'll just tell you a story that is in no way indicative, that is in no way meant to make this to lessen the horror of these dead children. But I will say that I have a bad habit of, I mean, I used to go off, would split my time between Toronto and Ottawa quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
And generally, I didn't want to be in Toronto as much as I wanted to be in Ottawa. And this is a 100% subconscious thing I did. I had the pathological result of when I would pack up and go to Toronto. I would get there and I would find out I had forgotten something vital, like my medication or my house keys or just some like something literally ridiculous that you can't forget. And I know, I'm a self-aware enough person and I've talked to therapists enough to understand that subconsciously I was purposefully forgetting those things because I was looking for an excuse to not be in Toronto, right? And I'm not saying that it's that harsh, but you put your kid and you belt it on the back seat of your car, there are some layers, right? to how you forget that that kid is there. I'm saying it's entirely possible. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't accuse people of murder, but you know what I'm talking about here.
Look, there are a hell of a lot of accidents in air quotes.
Yeah.
That are a lot more suspicious, but people don't ever want to think that parents don't like their children.
Yeah.
People convince themselves they like their children.
I know.
When they don't.
And we're just saying that sometimes when kids go and decide to go out swimming, maybe parents aren't as careful about watching over them as they should be. And maybe the parents aren't super unhappy when something bad happens to them on some level.
Well, yes, but then they have so much guilt that
yeah, absolutely. No. I'm not saying that
therefore
their conscious mind makes them horrifically guilty later on. I'm just talking about in the moment.
Well, the thing is, there are lots of people who shouldn't have children. This is why I never understood, if somebody wants an abortion, there's a reason for it.
I know.
Like, there are a lot of reasons to have an abortion.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you don't want children, you don't want children. I have never said that people should have children because they would be whole having children.
Yeah, that's a really dangerous thing to tell someone, because when they have that kid and they don't feel whole, they're going to blame that kid.
Well, what did I just watched something. What did I just watch?
I know, but while you're thinking of that, I'm just going to say that, and I'm not going to name names, but growing up, I knew a bunch of people who were only children. And they were only children when you saw them with their parents. They were only children because those parents had a kid and found out they didn't like having a kid that much. So they never had any more kids. And they were just kind of stuck with the one they had.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, I'm not naming names. And I'm sure you know people like that. But it's like you always feel extra sorry for those people. Because there's no system for, giving this kid a good life away from the parents that resent them, because the parents would have to admit that they figured out they didn't want children and put them up for adoption. And that is socially ruinous.
And then the child is a terrible child when they become an adult and never want to have anything to do with their parents again.
Oh, I know. And then they're always blamed for not wanting to have anything to do with their parents.
I can still remember this one kid that I went, and everybody was saying, what a terrible thing, after it's in the suit, right?
Right.
And somebody was talking about our old schoolmates and the rest of it. And then they were saying, blah, 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 blah. And it's just terrible. This particular person doesn't go and see their parents at all and has nothing to do with them, and how horrible this is. And I'm sitting there going, well, I don't think this particular person's life was all that great.
I think it's the most controversial, probably the most controversial thing I say on a regular basis is whenever people complain about the, people abusing their elderly parents and elder abuse. I'm like, here's the thing. Maybe it's a horrible, maybe it's tragedy, but if we could rewind 50 years, we might find out it was karma.
Yeah.
We might find out that those parents built the instrument of their own abuse by being horrific to those children 50 years ago. And now they are reaping what they sowed. Again, because I know cases like that.
Well, I mean, I sort of sit and I often talk about when I look back at my childhood, and I'm going, I look at my sisters and I, our lives had their ups and downs and everything else. But I swear that my parents, particularly mother, was really good in the first 3 or 4 years.
Right.
That of her children's lives. Right.
Yeah.
Because we all definitely had a sense of self, and we definitely had absolutely sort of none of those issues where you go, who am I, right?
Yeah.
That, in other words, we had a solid enough
ego foundation.
Yeah. Ego foundation in those first 3 or 4 years of all of ours. Now, you know, I mean, things as we got older.
Of course. Then there are always going to be conflicts. You know what? Being an adolescent is tough. Yeah. Teenagers have complicated problems. And because they're 20 years after their parents, you know, 20, 30 years after their parents were teenagers, those problems are actually pretty different and the parents can't relate anymore. And it creates a lot of tension.
Well, it can create a lot of tension. And of course, and I've already talked about my particular situation in different forms over the years, but basically, life was not necessarily easy, but you know, it could have been a hell of a lot worse. And my parents wanted us.
Yeah.
And they would have had more.
But there are parents out there who fundamentally don't want kids in the first place, and kids just happen because that's the way the human body works. Or sometimes, you know, they have a kid and they found out that, no, this isn't for me. And, you know.
And then it's too late.
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing that you got with this case. And to just slide it back to the case, it's like you got this woman who was horrifically abusive to the one daughter. And then just thought that she made it good by being really great to her second daughter. And you're right that it's like, it's not really plausible unless she has like a husband who's independently wealthy and is able to either spend a ton of time with the daughter or hire help, you know?
And the damage.
Then the daughters would probably have different last names though, which is something that people who write TV forget a lot. And one thing that I've always noticed in television is they don't really seem to note how it's actually a little weird for two adult sisters to have the same last name. That would actually be a little strange just in North America because of the social mores around taking husbands' names and the rate at which people get married. It's not unusual at all for two sisters to have completely different last names. Like, not even a little, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I was trying to think, and it makes it harder to recognize siblings sometimes, like Warren Beatty and Shirley MacLaine.
Yeah.
You know? They're siblings, but they don't have the same last name because one of them's a woman. But anyway, so just something to think about. This episode, I would have liked a little more detail. Again, they probably should have said that she finally got married and settled down, and that was part of the factor of why the second daughter had such a completely different upbringing.
And
than the
she
first.
Also didn't fit.
Yeah,
she
exactly.
would have never fit.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so
yeah, in that relationship and in that household. So, I mean, honestly, getting a new husband and having a new kid would have helped push her out the door and to this extreme lifestyle that she ended up taking up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's an element they could have helped.
Snakes,
And being obsessed with snakes.
I mean, we could have fixed this episode. But
it's this one is fixable. It's not a tragic failure at all.
No,
not at all. Like, it's just, you know, it's hard to get invested in this episode. You don't really care too much. And you just feel pretty bad for that. You feel very bad for the two, but really both daughters feel very bad. And you wish the show was a little harder on the mother than it is.
Yes.
Because she's the one causing all of this.
If I have one complaint, it's that this mother gets let off the hook.
Do you know what my one complaint is?
What?
So they're like, first off, the doctors are painted as so incompetent that they need Spencer Reed to tell them to do a drug panel to find out how she was knocked out. Really? You need Spencer Reed to tell you that? You're doctors. She said she was knocked out and lost her memory. Give her a full drug panel of all of the things that could have done that to her.
Well,
like, that's just a normal criminal investigation. But there's a line in that episode, in that scene, that really bothered me, which is they have the doc, because again, they're trying to have Spencer Reed show off. He likes to show off. They have him, the doctor say, because he said, do all this test, this test, this test, and this test. And the doctor says, Agent sorry, JJ? It's bad that I can't remember JJ's last name. Oh, this is embarrassing. Anyway, JJ just introduced you as doctor, but I didn't think you were a medical doctor. And he's like, oh, I'm not. Because, you know, he wants to show off. But what bothers me about that scene is, if someone is introduced to you as doctor, why would you not think they were a medical doctor? Do you know how what the percentage of people who get introduced by doctor is who are not medical doctors? Like, it's vanishingly small. Basically, no one who isn't as a medical doctor demands that people refer to them as doctor. Almost no one. And again, I mean, you're an academic. You hang out with academics. I know that within academia, there is the kind of person who demands that they always be referred to as doctor all of the time.
Yes. And right? Within the university, yeah. We refer and introduce another as doctor because it's understood.
Yeah, but in a university setting, that makes perfect sense.
Perfect sense.
And it's not a brag. But this is a law enforcement context, and there are plenty of medical doctors in the FBI. Like, so it's a very strange for a doctor to hear an FBI agent referred to as doctor. Why wouldn't you assume he was a medical doctor?
Oh, yeah, well...
I mean, I'm just saying, you absolutely would assume he was a medical doctor, right? If an FBI agent walked up to you, I'm Special Agent Prentice. Yeah. This is my associate, Special Agent Dr. Reed. Wouldn't you assume he was a medical doctor?
Yes. Yes, you would. It's like Dr. Scully.
Yeah, exactly. She's a doctor. Yeah, Dana Scully, also a doctor. Although she was not pretentious enough to make everybody refer to his doctor all doctor. The time. She was a medical doctor, but she didn't demand they say it. What's her name? On their coroner on Beyond Borders is a medical doctor. She doesn't demand that people refer to her as a doctor all the time. You know, like,
well,
come
we
on.
Know all know.
Reed's no, we all know Reed's got that emotion.
Terribly, absolutely. Yes, insecure.
He's unbelievably insecure. But it's like, you want to butch up Dr. Reed? Maybe have him stop unbelievably insecurely demand everyone call him doctor all the time. I feel like that'd be a good first step to the end point you want to reach. All right. But anyway, let's move on to the second episode.
Let's move on to Neon Terror. The only thing I am going to just insert, this is the first three episodes we are doing after the lawsuit against Criminal Minds became clear. We will refer to that when we get to the next episode, but and because you will have already heard our first
breakdown
lawsuit
of
edition
that.
And
there may have been more by the time you hear this in January.
You know, so we're and it's just like, oh well, yeah, that explains a lot. You know, I mean, we came up after we did that episode with a whole bunch of other things it explained when I was going through more stuff in the lawsuit, which was number one, like one of the guys is the visual.
The guy who does the digital graphics.
Yeah, the digital graphics. And he's, you know, one of the ones. And so Dan's going, that could explain some of the problems.
Weird dip they had. Guys, you know, getting harassed at work.
And he
might explain that.
Could explain his stress over his job, and he just doesn't care anymore. But he's, you know, while he's going through all of this crap, it's entirely possible. Okay, let's go to Neon Terror. When the third in a series of robbery homicides takes place in Miami, Florida, and two daters are gunned down on the same night, the BAU sets out to profile a spree killer who films the crimes as he commits them before releasing the footage to the media. Period.
I mean, that doesn't actually happen until the very end of his spree, but, you know. Here's something in the episode. So first off, this is the second episode. It's kind of a remake, because this, and I think you're going to agree with me when I say this, this is quite obviously a thematic sequel to Limelight.
Yeah.
in which some, yeah. while being no, I mean it is.
Yeah, and it even has is it Joe who is at the end?
You yeah, know? No, it's David has the exact same scene at the end.
Yeah.
You know? And we're gonna talk about that in a second. But I mean it is not as horrifically misogynist. Like the episode does not have that nightmarish worldview that Limelight does, but it still posits a world where David is out there saying that anybody profiting off of crime is immoral, while the episode opens with him profiting off of crime.
Of crime, yeah.
You know, it like literally it's like, opens with him being a hypocrite.
Yeah, and a real and that's the thing that just throws this into,
yeah,
into it, such yeah. such complete.
I mean, it's completely out of whack.
This episode is completely out of whack. The way, the and of course the you know the take that it does on the media and
oh god yeah,
yeah the well, idea it's 2017 the media is the enemy the anyway enemy now. So now it's really the enemy here.
But what's puzzling watching the episode is so they see on the news so they are looking at the crime scene photos, and that they only realize oh my god. It's weird. How did nobody notice that these women all have the same beret on, right? Then the TV news station publishes a video showing that all of the, like, extreme close-ups of all of the berets on all the dead women's heads all shot from the exact same angle, right?
Yeah.
Meaning someone, like, got right up on the beret and took a picture. But the thing is, I don't understand how they, who were just leafing through the crime scene photos, didn't notice that those photos weren't in the crime scene photos. You knew, last scene, you freaking told us that the cops didn't even notice the berets and probably didn't take close-up pictures of them. So the fact that there are now four unbelievably close-up pictures is all the evidence you need.
Three, actually.
Yeah. Close-up pictures is all the evidence you need that the killer is the one sending these photos.
Yeah.
Because the cops, all you have to do is go back to the cops who took the pictures and said, do you have photographs of this? No? Okay, well done.
Yeah.
But they don't bother doing that until the next woman is murdered and there's friggin' videotape on the nightly news happening 1 second after the murder. They're like, who got this photo? Because the cops were there 2 minutes after the shot was fired.
Yeah.
There's no way you could have gotten in there, and then he admits that he wasn't. Then they figured out it's the killer. But they should have already had that information the minute they saw the three pictures of the berets that the cops don't have.
Yeah.
It's very weird that they didn't notice it, since they specifically talk about the importance of the berets. Yeah, and oh my god, no, by the way, no reporter is worried about protecting their sources if there's the slightest suspicion that their source is the murderer. Like, none. You know? That can't happen. There's no way any journalist would treat the cops that way. I find that wholly and completely unbelievable.
Well, I didn't. It isn't well written.
No, it's not.
You know, I mean, and the woman who plays the editor at the news department, the head of the news. Well, first of all, why is that a friggin' demotion?
I know, right?
If she's running the entire
news department, how is this a demotion? Like, maybe she wants to be out there breaking stories and winning
well
Pulitzers.
Then she shouldn't have taken
the job, which pays more and has more responsibility
and is more important. It's just like on CNN, like, you know, I mean, yeah, if you want to be an anchor, so if she wanted to be an anchor, she should have wanted
That's
to be an anchor
track.
That's a different career path. She's yeah. running the entire news. And I asked somebody about, there's a guy called Victor Blackwell who usually shows up on Saturday and Sunday mornings. You don't okay. see him otherwise. It turns out that he is basically one of the key producers, right? This stuff, right? But he just, I guess, likes
going
why
on
he
the
does
on the weekends.
Yeah. going on the air on the weekends, I guess. I mean, I don't know. But I also said, well, why did Jim Sciutto become, well, it's a lot more money. It's a lot more prestige. Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, rather than being a reporter, some people, you know,
yeah,
want to be in front of the camera as, because most of these people don't do an awful lot of their own
research journalism
anymore. No. They determine who to talk to, and they do a wonderful job of doing those kinds of interviews. They're interviewers, yeah, but they're not out there. I mean, they talk to Maggie Haberman and have a lot of things with them. You know, I mean, Wolf Blitzer has always been Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah.
And yes,
he goes up there. And the weird part is there's a more ethical and descriptive name that they use in England to describe the job rather than anchor or, you know, host. In the UK, the job is described as newsreader. Because that's the job. You read the news on television. So I think that's in many ways, like, a more honest way to describe these jobs that people have. Because you're right, it's this weird thing North Americans have where there is this assumption that the person reading the news, that it's their news to read, you know, like they went out and they got the story and now they're the ones reading it, where it's like, no, that hasn't been how it worked in a very long time, if it ever did more than.
Yeah, I don't think like some of these people are key and they do go out, like Blitzer used to go out into the field. I mean, Anderson Cooper used to go out into the field more. But what happens is that they're the ones that, you know, have to sit there and decide, okay, you've got a 2-hour show. What is the focus of the show and how are we going to talk? Who are we going to talk to? Which journalists do we have who are in the field that we can talk to and stuff like that? Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like somebody doesn't understand either how that works. Like it was as if somehow or another, this was this terrible demotion. And she like, I could see how the killer thought that.
Okay, because he's not being paid attention to anymore. Yeah.
He's not being paid attention to her. He doesn't see her anymore on all the time because she's running the whole show.
Yep.
Right. And making those determinations as to who's doing what, when, why, and where, and sitting and leading.
But to a guy who just watches the news, it feels like she's disappeared.
Yeah. And so I can see him. But they treat her somehow or another as if it, and she, like that whole end scene, is such that somehow or another she misses being the center of attention. Then why the hell didn't she stay on the air?
Yeah, you're free to stay on the air.
I would assume if she was that good, she was free to stay on the air. She took the job to run the news department.
Yeah, and so why are you mad about it now? It's very strange premise-wise from this character.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, David Rossi is just being an idiot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, the episode literally opens with him on the news making money off of a murderer he caught.
And then talking about his own personal obsession in the book.
Yeah, really that different than serial killer? No. No, you just have an obsession with making everything about you, David.
It's called, you and serial killers. That's what you two guys have in common.
You're both narcissists.
Yeah, you're both narcissists. You know, and
By the way, now that's a more interesting version of this episode.
Yeah.
So the episode literally opens with David Rossi trying to profit off of a murder and loving the attention he gets, right?
Yeah.
So why not make the episode about how is David Rossi really that different than this murderer who's out there killing people to get attention for himself?
Well, because we have, you know, a writer who, I guess, I'm trying to think. I think there's a bunch of new writers in here, too.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, I mean, I don't know. Somebody must have come up with this idea and he got to write it.
Yeah.
And didn't see, of course, the earlier episode,
all of the episodes where David's out there pitching books. Because now he's written a book about, quote, like, what really ticks me off, right, is, so we're supposed to talk about the way he has flagellated himself with, quote-unquote, the Womb Raider all of these years, and, like, had to suffer through the guy's desire to ruin his birthday every year by making him deal with the bodies, and how it's like, this is a very personal thing, and I did it for the victims, right? And I was willing to put myself through this suffering, and the minute the guy's dead, he goes and he writes a book about it to cash in.
Yeah.
Suddenly it's not about the victims, and it's not about the families, and it's not about his own moral compass of having to do something. Well, the story's got an ending now. I killed him, so I can cash in on it.
Yeah.
It's weird. There's an episode in that. Like, there really is an episode that, you know, talks about how David's motivation for solving crimes is not that different from this guy's motivation for committing crimes. He likes the limelight.
Yeah.
He really does. He likes being famous. He likes being rich, you know, and that only happens if people get brutally murdered. And he goes out of its way to exploit it. So it's like, David, you're the one we should be indicting here, not the reporter. Because then you get the show turning the reporter into an insane supervillain.
I know.
Who, at the end of the episode, literally like, hey, when you see that serial killer, thank him for giving me the story. Like, what is going on?
Never mind. I mean, I just sat and watched these three episodes and went, God, thank God we've only got a year and a half left.
I know. Well, that, and you got to remember, both the second two seasons are very short. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, they're very short seasons, those last two seasons. Well, it's funny when you're watching this one, too, right? Because, I'm watching this episode, right? And I'm, like, looking over his motivation and what he's up to, and I'm just like, okay, you seem to know a lot about what the killers want. You're the same kind of narcissist they are. Yet they advise her to stop putting his stuff on the air. And first off, you shouldn't be putting a snuff film on the air either.
Anyway!
You shouldn't be showing footage of people being murdered on the nighttime news. But it's like, they specifically do that to anger him. Like, they specifically do that to frustrate and anger him. That is why they say they're doing it. And yet it doesn't occur to them for a second that, don't you think he might lash out at the news? Like, don't you think he's going to lash out at the people who he's seen as his partner and are now you're asking to betray him? It doesn't occur to them for a second, oh, well, you know, he might lash out at you and come to shoot you guys. Maybe we should offer you some kind of protection, or at least watch the area in case he turns up. Because, spoiler alert, they would have caught him right away had they just put undercover guards in that room waiting for him to turn up.
Yeah, because
he would have been caught immediately.
So, it's just... There's absolutely nobody, well, everybody's obviously terribly concerned about their, about the lawsuits.
Yeah. Nobody's really thinking about the job
right
they're
now,
doing.
Okay, the lawsuits aren't coming down the pipe now, but the shit has started to hit the fan.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, because the complaints have gone in and Human Resources is doing an investigation. Human Resources, of course, covers up the stuff.
Oh,
but
of course.
That's not the point.
That's what
the point is that it's in the wind.
Yeah. That's going to completely change the mood of the area. And it's the Me Too era happening at the same time. So, yeah, you have to imagine there's a ton of behind the scenes stress.
And just remember, Kevin Spacey went down.
I know, I remember.
Like, when did Kevin Spacey go down? Later than this, right?
Later than this, but fairly, you know, early into the whole Me Too thing. Because they had time to do a whole season of, a whole season of that terrible show he was on, House of Cards.
Yeah.
Oh, it's god awful.
I only watched the first season.
Yeah, and it was not a good season. And then we stopped watching the show.
I just stopped watching it.
It's not a good show. It's a very dumb show about politics. But anyway, the point we're getting at, right? I mean, I know it's just a pot boiler and a thriller more than it has anything to do with actual politics, but it's, even for a show that just has the patina of politics, it's very bad. But no, it's just interesting to know that that must be going on behind the scenes, that they must have these internal concerns about way people are acting. You know what? You're right. Maybe that's distracting people on the show. And that's one of the factors into why this is so bad this year. But I have another factor for why it's so bad this year, which we'll get to in a second. Any final thoughts about final thoughts about Neon?
No, I think we've skewered it enough.
It's not a good episode.
Neon David Rossi's terrible. Help me. Yeah,
David Rossi's terrible, I think, is the real message to come away from this one.
Yeah. You know,
if there is a subtext at all,
the bookends are David Rossi, and he is terrible.
He is. Okay. All right, so
now we come
I'm
to.
I'm so excited.
Okay, we come to False Flag. Joe Mantegna has directed this, and Breen Fraser.
Yeah,
wrote it.
Oh, Breen, what are you doing? All right, him and the
Well, you know,
go
he
for
has
it.
To.
No, we know.
Have
hey, we know
to
he's
know
distracted.
The shit is going to hit the fan at some point.
We know
point.
He's distracted. All right, go.
Okay. When two members of a Roswell conspiracy theory group die in a quick succession, the BAU determines both crimes were committed by a budding serial killer, only to find themselves re-examining the evidence after a catastrophic event.
Okay.
Meanwhile, whoa.
Oh, sorry.
Got a meanwhile here.
I'm surprised.
Lewis struggles to keep her emotions in check as she interrogates a young podcaster with ties to the group.
With ties to? She's one of the key members of the group. That's not ties. The book writer has ties to the group. The guy who writes books has ties to the group. She's like the head of the group. She is the group.
Yes.
All right. So let's get into this. Tara Lewis.
I don't know where you would start with
it's
this.
I'll start with the very beginning of the episode, which is, okay, here's the problem with this episode. And it's a problem that, and I guarantee this happened. I have no proof that what I'm about to say happened, because I wasn't in the writer's room, but I guarantee this happened. And you tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm definitely not. And I will fight you over this. All right. Tell me if you think I'm wrong, though. When this episode was conceived of, when this episode was first written, they shot the guy. He didn't kill himself. The first version of this script. He didn't shoot himself in the first version of this script. They shot him. He screams, "You bitch." He points the gun forward, and as he lifts the gun, they shoot him. That is what happens in the version of the script that Breen Fraser turned in. And somewhere along the line, I don't know who objected. Maybe it was Erica Messer. Maybe it was one of the actors. Maybe it was the studio decided that, they can't have the team have been tricked into murdering an innocent man. Right? Like, they can't allow that to be something that the characters did. And because they can't allow that, they have to have the guy do something that makes zero sense, kill himself for no reason. And how do I know this is what happened? I can tell you. Because the entire rest of the season is about the aftermath of this episode. But the aftermath of this episode is they did nothing wrong. Like, the entire arc of this season is built on them having to pay and being scrutinized for a mistake they made. But the writing staff, or producers, or maybe the actors, are unwilling to have the characters have made a mistake. The rest of the season only works if they shot him, but because they didn't shoot him, the rest of the episode does, the rest of the whole season, full stop, does not function.
Yeah, and you wouldn't know that when you were reading it, because the when you're watching it the very first time.
Yeah.
Like, I when you're saying it, I'm thinking, and then I'm just going, okay, let's follow this one up as we're going along.
Exactly.
Because you're going to have to have to prove it, because the first time you watch this episode, the only question you have is, well, why the hell did he kill himself?
Yeah. And I don't understand why he killed himself.
Within the context of the show,
there's no reason for this character
to have
killed himself.
That's what I'm talking about.
No, you're absolutely right. There is no reason for this character to have killed himself within the context of the episode. None. Nope.
No.
It makes zero sense.
Even if you thought the BAU was out to get you, you would drop the gun.
Yeah. Because the local cops are there.
It's all not of his gun.
The place is full of witnesses.
It's not his gun. He would just drop it.
No. Unless she smirked at him at the back of the office and he realized she was setting him up. His girlfriend was setting him up. And then he would try to shoot her.
That's what I'm saying.
He is so emotionally fraught at that moment, the only logical two things for him to do are to just drop the gun on the ground, or shoot her, the woman who he trusted, who has betrayed him and framed him. What cannot make any sense at all is him shooting himself in the head. There is no conceivable reason for him to do that, and that is why I guarantee it was an edict put on the script by someone. I can't tell you who. You know, I wasn't in that writing room, but it was somebody. Somebody said, no, they can't make a mistake. They can't fail. They can't have flaws. They can't kill an innocent man. That is what happened. And the entire episode is supposed to be about them figuring out how they were tricked into murdering an innocent man. But because the episode, you know, is crippled at its core by this rewriting, by this insane rewriting of what should be happening, the episode doesn't function in any way, shape, or form. It is just a complete failure of an episode. And as a consequence, their cowardice here and their need to have them be infallible breaks the entire rest of the season as well.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Now you're repeating yourself.
No, but I'm just reminding us what the stakes are.
Yeah, I know. But what happens is we still have to figure out...
No, we'll talk about this actual episode now. Absolutely.
Yeah, because we will sort of cover that. Because this episode, it was just so, I would say, dogmatic.
Yeah.
That was one of the things. Like, I never did understand why your friend, this was the episode where she stopped watching. I can give you a whole bunch of other episodes
where
I stopped watching. She made it this far.
I know.
It's amazing. And first of all, it's dogmatic. It's, it doesn't really, why they call it a Roswell conspiracy theory group, because Roswell doesn't come in.
Well, no,
because
they are actually in Roswell.
Well, yeah, I know.
What I'm saying, that is why
because they're in Roswell, you have to think aliens are going to come up at some point.
I know, no, you're absolutely right.
Come on, you know. Why
set it in Roswell if aliens aren't going to get mentioned?
Yeah, aren't going to come up. And aliens never come up. It's this conspiracy over 9/11. It's like all of this other stuff, right? Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, it's and the psychology behind what, you know, Tara is constantly saying is, that's psychological theory, kind of 101 about what happens to people and why they believe things that, create these
They're creating order out of chaos, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you know, now, but Tara Lewis never says that, never calls it chaos.
That's
the funny thing is that she never, that nowhere, not once, is the term chaos used. And I mean, logically, that's it. The world is chaotic, and people, nowhere is it ever said clearly, the world is chaotic. It is a freaking mess.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to make sense.
Come up with a narrative.
We now have, this is 2017. We already know about all of these groups that are on the internet. That never comes up. All of these people can join with other like-minded people. Yeah, she's got a podcast. She asked her, do you know what a podcast is? What the? What the?
I know, right?
It's 17. It's like, I'm sitting here going, you know, I mean, yeah, if this was 2007 and somebody said, do you know what a podcast is? I could understand it.
Yeah. Okay, but in 2017? No, there's no way.
There's absolutely no way. I mean, mind you, in 2007, you could only have a 10-minute podcast on YouTube. But, you know, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, she has her own distribution channel. She has her own website.
Yeah, but there are so many, like, things that could have been done in this episode that, okay, you know, but they just want to make all of this as if everything that they think, like JFK, it wasn't a single gunman. I am sorry. Okay. Yeah. Now, I will never make a decision. I don't belong in the people that say, well, it had to have been blah, 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 blah.
Just for the record, it was absolutely the CIA. To continue. if you want to do a podcast where we talk about the evidence of that, we can do that some other time. But just FYI, there's an insane line in the episode where David Rossi is like, the Chicago mob killed JFK, to which I would respond, how? Can the Chicago mob get people in and out of Russia? Last time I checked, the Chicago mob can't get people in and out of Russia or change a parade route to make sure it goes by a place that's easy to shoot. You know who can do that? The mayor of Dallas, Texas, who was the brother of the recently fired head of the CIA. Anyway, we're not going to talk about Kennedy.
Stop!
Here.
It is nothing.
I know. But no, the ridiculous thing that they're saying that no conspiracies are true.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's insane.
That is completely, you know, like.
The idea that no conspiracies are true is in itself a bizarre delusion. Like, yeah. Spoiler alert, because she keeps saying the FBI doesn't frame people. Have you heard about the history of the FBI?
Well, obviously not.
Okay, so like, even like, I mean, I hate to be the one to tell you this, Tara, because apparently you didn't notice. You're black. Okay? And what the FBI spent the 50s doing was, how shall I put this? Doing everything within their power, including sometimes murdering people, in order to put down the Black Liberation Movement. And if that doesn't count as a conspiracy, what does?
Yes, yeah. I mean,
they had, what do you call it? So, everybody, I think, in case you don't know about Fred Hampton, he was the most important black leader of the 1960s, okay? The FBI put someone in his organization, right? Put someone inside his organization. And that man constantly, because he was an FBI plant, constantly demanded that they do more and more violent things.
Yeah.
Like you got to kidnap and murder a cop. You got to, because he was trying to get them to be more extreme. So the FBI would be able to come in and arrest all of them and kill some of them, right? That is what the FBI wanted, and this guy was trying to make it happen. And Fred Hampton wouldn't go along with it. No matter what this guy did, no matter what he suggested, Fred Hampton wouldn't go along with this kind of violence. So the result was, we got to come up with a solution to this. And their solution was, have this guy feed Fred Hampton and his guards a bunch of drugged food, then leave the door unlocked, then leave the room, and then the cops come in and shoot all of them to death. And that's what happened. Fred Hampton was murdered in his bed while he slept by the cops because he was set up for that by the FBI. Tell me, under what frame of, like, not even what frame of reference, under what linguistic theory does that not count as a conspiracy?
Yeah.
You know? And you would say, well, that's just a crazy conspiracy theory. Except,
they
kept extensive files on everything they did, and a bunch of people who knew Fred Hampton broke into an FBI office and got all those files, and that's how we know about COINTELPRO.
Yeah.
So, yes, the FBI does conspiracies. They do frame people. They do murder people. And you can say, oh, well, that was J. Edgar Hoover days. They don't do anymore. Fine. There's a whole documentary about the frigging people who, a guy who was, you know, a real scumbag and wanted, you know, he owed a bunch of tax, back taxes and he wanted to stay out of jail. So he collaborated with the FBI to invent a terrorist cell so that he could turn these guys over to the FBI so that he could get out from under his tax problems. That really happened in 2006. While Robert Mueller was the head of the FBI put a bunch of innocent people in jail because a guy had to get over his own tax problems. That's a thing that really happened. I mean, yeah, that's before Tara Lewis joined the FBI, but it's not long before Tara Lewis joined the FBI.
Yes, but she drank the Kool-Aid, so...
She did. She's as much, and I think your point is right, she's as much of a blinkered cultist as all of the conspiracy theorists.
Except that she belongs to a cult that is acceptable.
That's true.
Okay. Now, I mean, and these other, I mean, some of these things, like I had one of my students bring me this entire book about 9/11.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, in everybody can go and look at that conspiracy theory and the rest of it. Well, you know, like you sit there and some of these conspiracy theories are, you know, you sort of sit there and go, well, yeah and no. But when you start taking a look at the people, right? And what do you call what happened? Now, here's to me, right? The military conspired to keep the Vietnam War going.
100%. That's what the Pentagon Papers proved.
And the Robert McNamara as well.
Yeah.
Right? He supported this and blah, 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 blah. And there's LBJ buying the line. They lied to him.
Oh, yeah.
They
about how things were going. Specifically so they could keep the war going.
They could keep the war going. They could get more money and the rest of it. Right? And then you take a look at what happened with Kissinger and Richard Nixon, and you just go, holy shit.
Who, again, literally committed treason against America to keep the war going so they could get Nixon elected. Like, that happened. These aren't theories. This is all of the tapes exist, all of the phone stuff exists. So I think it's understandable why people would hear that and say, here's the actual, here's all of the actual evil stuff the government did. I can understand how someone then takes the next step and said, well, maybe they did do 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe it.
No.
But I understand where people are coming from.
Yeah, you can just see it because they're, I mean, it is so bizarre. And when you take a look, you know, at Saudi Arabia, right?
Oh, God,
God. Okay, like, and there's all these other conspiracies, and you just go, and these anti-government people, now there's a whole new bunch of anti-government people. My good God, the internet is...
The Nazis and the QAnon people, yeah.
Oh, no, there's another group yet that actually... Oh, never mind. That's
we'll get into it another
recent.
Time.
That's too recent to even begin to talk about, but it's just these bizarre bunch of people who are... You know, I mean, essentially, except that they're too loose because some of them are anarchists, and there have always been anarchists. And I mean, and yes, you anarchists believe in disorder.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it. So, you know, it's a strange sort of thing.
Group of
I mean,
people.
But it's the way that whole thing with Lewis, as I said. Yes, you want to make human beings.
Yeah, they want to. I mean, again, we are creatures who create narratives to create order so we can understand the world. That's what humans do. That's what humans have always done.
We are meaning creating creatures.
Animals, yes. That is what separates a human from another animal is the desire to create meaning and structure.
Yeah.
Right?
That's why we have gods and goddesses.
Exactly. Right. And anyway. So I understand how that turns into conspiracy theory logic. Like, I completely get it. But, and I can't stress this enough, that doesn't mean people aren't right. And fundamentally, Tara Lewis doesn't have a leg to stand on when she defends the honor of the FBI.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that was a big problem. Just all you have to do is read the history of the FBI. Yeah. And there are some real, real problems. The history of the freaking CIA.
I know.
You know, all you have to do. Yeah, I mean, they are.
Hey, remember that time that the CIA accidentally invented the Unabomber? That happened.
You know, never mind. Let's
His stressor was a freaking government experiment.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, and I mean, and then the CIA, of course, had all those government experiments with. I mean, there's all sorts of ethical and moral issues with any government. And the bigger Absolutely. The government, the bigger the government, the more power the government has, mm-hmm. the more potential there is for these weird conspiracies and to actually happen.
Well, and what's funny when you watch the episode, right, is as people who know about the U.S. government and all the shady crap it's gotten up to over the year, it's weird that the episode is unwilling to mention any of it.
Yeah,
like, this woman is up against an FBI agent living her dream of finally getting to confront, you know, the deep state, the people behind the people, right, behind the curtain, all of that. And she has nothing to offer. Again, I, a regular person who doesn't believe 9/11 was an inside job, can go on for half an hour about all of the evil, illegal stuff that the FBI has actually done that has been well documented, right? We just did 10 minutes of it. But there's a lot more we could talk about. And this woman says none of it. Because the character, like, it's insane. The show doesn't want to admit that the main character's point of view can be questioned. Like, and the big drama is not that Tara Lewis might be wrong about this woman. It's that she still feels sad about Sandy Hook.
Yeah, that's the whole point she feels. Because that's a stupid. That is really
Oh no, that's an unbelievably stupid conspiracy.
Talk about
But I mean, any conspiracies stupid. That gun nuts have is invariably unbelievably stupid. They're gun nuts.
Yeah.
They only believe stupid things. You know,
and
a lot
to
of them
our
are
viewers lying. Who are gun nuts, stop it.
Just stop it.
You know, you will have heard us earlier on if you have
talking
been
about gun culture in America. It okay. comes up on this show fairly regularly. I wonder why.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, but the thing is that if she is this, you know, it constantly Tara Lewis, young, like this thing says, a young pot, they make her as if somehow or another, like it's just
what?
Now I'm just trying to find the words to explain how they wanted. Clearly, Joe Mantegna wanted this actress Zelda Williams.
Okay.
Whoever
Wait, that's Zelda is. Williams?
That is.
That's Zelda. Robin Williams' daughter.
Ah, yes.
She's named after the Legend of Zelda.
Yes, of course.
Famously true. That's a thing. He was obsessed with that game when it came out. Then he had a daughter a year later, so he named her Zelda.
And that's actually, and that's a nice name. There are other Zeldas.
It's a great name. Yeah, I'm not complaining. I just think it's a fun piece of trivia.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was Robin Williams' daughter playing the part. But anyway, continue with what you were saying.
No, like I am trying to coordinate in my head what is really, really, really wrong with with the way she has been asked to play this role.
Yeah, and no, it's a big mistake.
It is just, you just needed, because she has no gravitas here.
Nope.
If she is this important, and supposedly she is an important podcaster.
Yeah.
About these issues, she has to have had a little bit, and she just is just too, it's almost as if, you know, I mean, I
she's completely unsure of herself when she should 100% be like, this is what she has been planning for and dreaming of the whole time.
And so,
why is she so bad at this?
Yes, and why is she bringing up, for example, Sandy Hook? Well, that's so Lewis can
her emotional moment, but it's not relevant to what's happening here.
Well, and as far as I'm concerned, I didn't believe a minute of it.
I know.
Because I still think, as you do, that Lewis is actually a closet sociopath.
I know.
Deep down inside, so I don't believe it. But
yeah, I know. So it's very weird to watch her having an emotional reaction.
And why would she have been at Sandy Hook? I don't know
why she would have been at Sandy Hook. That's very strange.
I don't even think she was in the FBI at that point.
No, but it's like, why are they sending why would the FBI have a counselor there? Like, that's not generally what the FBI does. They would just have a local person to counsel them. You don't fly in a counselor from another state. It's a very weird thing for them to have done. Yeah, because it's not like
anybody did any. I mean, remember, all our writers do their own research.
That's true. That's
true. And so I'm sure that old Breen thought, well, yeah, let's do the Sandy Hook one. You know, let's make her do the Sandy Hook one because it's so stupid.
Yeah.
As I really think, and I think that, you know, you wanted some, this episode should have had some gravitas, and it doesn't. And the whole business of killing and why the killing was done, and it's just so insane.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they're just saying that all that happened was a lady got into a fight with a guy, and he said something unforgivable, and so she shot him. And that's all that actually happened.
And why do you call her a budding serial killer?
Well, no, because I think that's what they think. I mean, to be fair, in defense of the person who wrote the synopsis, that is what they think is going on.
Okay, yeah, well, and you can't blame the person who wrote the synopsis.
No, no.
For not being able to figure out what was going on, because I really found the crime itself was just like so bizarre, and the glee, you know, and then they have to have this guy who is just totally a non-believer. And he also does these conspiracy, like there's a difference between white supremacists, which is who he's doing all these at least a couple of these books. And then these conspiracy theorists.
I mean, they are, to be fair, there's a lot of overlap because both conspiracy theorists and white supremacists always end up blaming everything on the Jews.
Well, yeah, well, everything.
That is the end point of all conspiracy theories, is it's the Jews, you know, and it's kind of disgusting, but it suggests they all come from the same place.
We didn't get that in this episode.
No, we didn't get that in this episode. That's absolutely true. Thank heavens. One of the dishonest thing about the episode.
Yeah.
We didn't get that.
Yeah, no, but I'm just going, yes, I know. As I try and tell my class, they make up like a minuscule amount of the population of the world.
And yet somehow they're secretly in charge of
all
everything.
Evil. They are in charge of everything and responsible for all evil in the world. Are you insane. Out of your mind? Have you watched Rodney? did you watch Rodney King? Have you seen that the Floyd? I tried one of my students just recently.
Yeah.
You know, and she said, well, I just saw pictures. I said, well, don't watch the tape. Just don't. Yeah. I said, you can't get through it. I do not know how that girl managed to continue to film it and had this, I have to keep filming this. I can't do anything about it. We're going to find out more sort of about all of the other stuff, but you have these four cops. Who are you going to call? The cops?
I know.
You got four of them there.
You got four cops murdering a guy. And who are you supposed to call about that? Like, there are conspiracies. The powerful cover up for the powerful. And what's so insulting about this episode is it suggests that you can instantly trust anything, implicitly trust anything the government tells you.
Anything a cop does.
Anything a cop does is trustworthy. And by the way, that's another sub-reason why they can't have them shoot the guy. It's because it would suggest them shooting the guy would suggest the cops can make a mistake.
Yeah.
And yet we're expect, and then her plot doesn't even make sense because she sticks the gun into her boyfriend's pocket.
Why?
No. When they're out, first off, what did she think was going to happen?
Yeah.
Again, that he, hopefully she thought, I mean, if they had shot him, I would say her plot worked, but she put it in before they walked through a metal detector. How did she, because like, had he walked through the metal detector and gone off, which is what she must have thought was going to happen, he would have said, okay, well, I'll stand back. And the guy would have come over and frisked him and found the gun. Yeah. And then he would have said, that's not mine. He would have been arrested. He would have admitted he was sleeping with her and she had been sleeping with the other guy and she would have been caught. Like, the minute she sees the metal detector there, her plan, whatever her plan was, hopefully to get him shot by the authorities, her plan evaporates.
Yeah.
The second the metal detector is there. And that's what really pisses me off, because the whole idea that the metal detector didn't work allows us to live in a world, like, it asks us to live in a world where a group of cops would put a metal detector on a truck, cart it into a building, plug it in, and then not walk through it to test it.
Yeah, to test it. Give me a break.
And on what planet does a cop not at least walk through the metal detector once?
In 2017?
In 2017! Just check. You unplugged it. You moved it. You plugged it back in. Walk through it once. You know? There's no way that would happen. But the minute she sees the metal detector and has no idea that it doesn't work, her plan has completely evaporated.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that can happen now is it beeps, they pat him down, they find the gun, they arrest him, they ask him where he got the gun, and he's like, I have no idea, you're framing me. If they convince him he's being, but, just FYI, my girlfriend was also dating that other guy and cheating on him with me, so there's a 50-50 chance she's the killer of that guy. Which he figures out right away. So. Yeah.
Although we could have had that as a conspiracy theory too.
Oh. No, and what's so frustrating. But what's so frustrating about it is, like, there's no reason. And we keep coming back to it. There's no reason for him to shoot himself.
No. There's no reason for him to kill himself.
Yeah.
And that's like, the biggest flaw in this entire episode. You know, and the other flaw is the way that the podcaster has been asked to portray her character.
Oh, yeah. No, she's like, there's no consistency to the character. There's no, like, I don't know who this woman is or what this woman wants. Like, nothing she's doing makes sense. I mean, I feel sorry for Zelda Williams, because what is there here to play? The character is nonsense.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
Although, a funny thing. Oh, sorry, continue?
No, go on.
Oh, no. I was going to say, a funny thing is, also, I'm just going to put this out there. Who on earth cleans a fish tank that way?
Never having had a fish tank.
I have cleaned fish tanks for people. And you empty them out, which ain't easy to do, by the way. Emptying out a fish tank is not easy to do. But you empty out the fish tank, either with a siphon or with a bucket. And then, and this is the important part, you pick it up and you take it outside, because it's gonna get messy and there's gonna be soap and water everywhere. Like, no sane person would clean a fish tank in the middle of the room where the fish tank is, especially if that room, I was gonna say, has hardwood floor or carpeting. Basically, if you have anything but a linoleum floor, don't try to do that inside the place where you keep the fish tank. Because it is messy as hell. You have to use, again, bleach to get out the stains. It's really bad. There's no way he shouldn't have been doing that out in the garage. Also, how did they not figure out it was an accident when the hose for filling, when the bleach was there, the cleaning tools were there, and the hose for filling up the tank was there? Wouldn't your first thought be accident? Like, well, a guy removed his fish from the tank, he got a bunch of bleach, he got a bunch of scrubbing tools, and then someone came in and put a hose in it and dunked his head underwater? Like, your first thought should be accident, or maybe suicide, because the hose was still in the fish tank from it being filled up, which means it was recently empty, and all the cleaning supplies means he was cleaning it. Like, it would be very weird for someone to kill him just then. It's way more likely to be an accident. It's a very stupid episode.
What can I say?
Also, Joe is just stupidly playful the entire episode as a director. Like, he thinks he's making a comedy episode. Like, they do that scene where they bust into the thing They bust into the guy's cabin, and then Matt's like, "Oh my god!" And then we reveal that the reason he said "Oh my god" was Emily was already there, and a bunch of cops were already there.
And we took a helicopter.
Yeah, but I'm like, why is he saying "Oh my god" in a gravelly fashion if all he's doing is seeing that Emily and the sheriff are already there? Also, why didn't you radio him from the helicopter? They have a federal car. There's a radio out in it. You don't need to be using the cell phones. Also, how did Matt and Luke drive up to the place without noticing the three cop cars parked outside? Like, it's this unbelievably stupid staging so Joe can get in a joke in his episode. It's ridiculous. Also, speaking of, I don't know if this is a script writing problem or a prop maker's problem. Here's the thing. They find, he said he's got but a bunch of fertilizer, and they pull it back the tarp, and what is under the tarp is ammonium nitrate fuel oil, or ANFO. And what ANFO is the main explosive used in industrial uses, like industrial lever explosions. You pack a whole bunch of this stuff in and you blow up huge things. You know, blowing the tops off of mountains, demolishing buildings. That's what ANFO is for. Okay? And they find 16 bags of industrial level explosives in this man's yard. And he jokes, "I'm cooking tomatoes and I need the fertilizer." And what would happen is, and the problem here is, right, the writers know, and again, maybe just the prop people, it's probably the writers, that ammonium nitrate and fuel oil is used to blow things up. But ammonium nitrate is used as fertilizer for plants. And the thing they don't understand is, right, that someone who orders 50 bags of ammonium nitrate might have a large farm, or they might be planning to mix it with a little bit of diesel and create a giant explosion that blows up, say, for example, the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. Because that's what happened. It was ammonium nitrate and fuel oil. But he didn't buy explosives from a retailer. He bought a whole bunch of fertilizer and then a bunch of diesel fuel and made his own bomb. And that is what should have been under the tarp is 50 bags or 16 bags or whatever of ammonium nitrate. But instead, what's in there is 16 bags of ammonium nitrate fuel oil factory produced explosives, which, by the way, legal, like, you can't buy. You can't go to a store and buy explosives. The man even having them is a giant federal crime. Do you know how many special kinds of licenses you need to be able to buy explosives and how closely those explosives are tracked?
Remember Oklahoma City.
Exactly.
Ever since.
Why they have to make their own, right? That's why they have to make their own explosives, because you can't go out and buy explosives. So if this character, and this is just the guys not doing their research and not understanding how the world works, it's fine for him to have like a bunch of ammonium nitrate, and they think he might be building a bomb and be suspicious. But the minute you see that this man has 16 bags of explosives, you would arrest him, because unless he's planning to blow up a mountain, there's no possible reason for him to have that isn't illegal. And so they should have arrested him on the spot, but the writers honestly don't understand the difference between ammonium nitrate, the fertilizer, and the fertilizer bomb, ammonium nitrate fuel oil. That's how dumb the people writing this show are.
Whoever's in control of the props guy.
Yep.
You know, I mean, yeah, the mistakes that get made are just phenomenal.
They're amazing. And do you know what's particularly hilarious, though? Oh, please.
No, I was just going to say it just happens all the time.
No, it does. But do you know what's particularly hilarious? After this episode, the prop makers had so much fun making secret cases for guns to pop out of. Two different characters in this show, after this, start having secret cases that guns pop out of if you press a button. Luke will have one of these later, and then we'll see David Rossi with one in, like, next season. Like, the show becomes upset. Like, whoever makes the props on the show is just had so much fun building these gun cases. They're like, we gotta build more of those gun cases. Can I build more gun cases? Maybe all the characters have magnetically locked gun cases. It's so stupid. Yeah, it's like, here's the thing. I don't believe Luke could build that, which means he came in and paid someone to come in and build him a gun case that he was, like, hidden behind a painting or something. It's ridiculous when you see it. But the another huge problem in this episode is, why does she give someone a shell casing?
So that they can arrest her, right? Otherwise, I mean, how else?
There's no reason. Because the thing is, they're like, their theory is
she would have taken a gun casing and thrown it
down a well somewhere. It's, well, not a toilet, because, you know, it might get stuck, but down a well somewhere. It's Nevada. There's plenty of, it's New Mexico.
Throw it in the bush.
There's plenty of places to throw that would never find it. Because their theory is that she wants additional cred in the truther community by knowing about a conspiracy before it happens, right? But you can do that by telling the guy that the government is going to come and frame her boyfriend. That the government is going to come and frame her boyfriend for something and probably kill him. Giving him the shell casing that killed, that was the bullet fired from the gun that killed the guy who shot in the neck, that doesn't prove anything. Like, that doesn't help your saying, you know, the FBI is going to come. It just makes it look like you committed the crime, because how else would you have the shell casing?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. I mean, that's the whole point. And, well, as I said, it makes her, like, really stupid.
Yeah, no, unbelievably stupid.
No, she should have taken the shell casing and thrown it out, because there's nothing you can do. Or, and if she somehow or another wanted to, I don't know. I mean, I can't even imagine. But no, I mean, I just can't believe she would have given it to somebody to hold.
No, it doesn't make sense.
If she's smart enough to make all of these different type connections and
because the narcissistic value they think she gets from, like, being in the know about a conspiracy, she fully gets that just by being able to predict that her boyfriend's going to get murdered by the FBI. Yeah. That's all the cred she needs, right? So you don't need this additional thing of, also, here's a piece of evidence. Because she's not saying, I killed the guy who was in a JFK nut. She's saying the government killed the guy who's the JFK nut, and I somehow have the shell casing. Like, they needed, you're right, they needed her to do something stupid to get caught, but within the logic of the show, it makes zero sense.
Yeah, well.
Like, none at all. God, such a frustrating episode.
Well, it was just, I mean, it was,
it's
just,
like, every scene has something stupid in it.
Everybody has a breaking point, and your friend had a breaking point.
Yeah, this was the line.
This was her line.
Yeah, I know. But, like, no, it's crazy. Her plan makes zero sense. There's no, like, again, fundamentally, not only the handing over the shell case, which is bad enough, but again, she couldn't have known that the metal detector didn't work, which means the most likely thing after she walked in and saw the metal detector was her boyfriend is going to get grabbed, patted down, arrested, right? And then he was going to be, and then he would have told them about her. That is 100% what should have happened.
Yeah.
But miraculously, he found the gun in the thing, he started screaming, and then killed himself, which there's no reason to possibly who would have ever done. And that's a fault of the producers, CBS, who knows? Because I'll say this about the show, right? I would still call it a stupid episode, an unbelievably stupid episode, if they had shot him when he raised the gun to shoot his girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
If they had shot him when he raised the gun to shoot his girlfriend, I would still say this is one of their stupidest episodes ever. But I would at least say what happened at the beginning of the episode made a little bit of sense, and it properly set up the rest of the season. But they had the dumbest episode they've ever done, and it also completely fails in the one thing it had to do, setting up the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So it's the dumbest episode, and it's also failing at what it needs to do.
Yeah.
How is this episode this bad?
Yeah, because these guys, the BAU, they get away with all sorts of things, and it never affects anything. No. And this is nothing compared to some of the things they've done. So why the hell would they
killed a bunch of suspects? I mean, they were sure those people did it, but those people sure as hell didn't get a trial. This guy, a crazy person shooting himself in the head while they were there. Also, he's neither famous nor related to anyone important.
No. And Fork Tongue, I would tell you is, for example, Fork Tongue Girl.
Yeah.
Okay. She would have been a justified shooting. Well, he didn't have to kill her.
No.
He could have shot her in the knee. He could have shot her in the arm. Knee,
the hip, you know, like arm, shoulder, hip, leg. There's plenty of places that aren't center mass. You could have shot this woman when she refused to push the knife.
She only had the knife down.
You didn't even have to wait for her to charge you.
No.
You say, put the knife down or I'll shoot you. She doesn't put the knife down. Shoot her. That's a good shooting. You didn't have to kill her. But he waits for her to charge and kills her.
Yeah. And obviously there was no repercussions to that.
On that. But it's like suddenly a crazy man killing himself while you happen to be there? That you're gonna destroy this thing on? But if they had actually had them shoot an innocent man because they were tricked into it by the killer, that, I would have said, demanded investigation and looking into. Because all of the stuff about breaking up their team in the BAU would have been based around the fact that there are now huge lawsuits coming in for them having killed an innocent man.
Yeah.
And the lawyer would be like, we don't care that you got tricked by a psychopath. You still killed an innocent man. And that would have been an interesting way to take the story.
Yes.
But yeah, this show is not about taking the story interesting places, though.
No, it's about covering its ass. Particularly now.
Oh, God, yeah. Especially knowing that this was like half a comedy episode really bothers me. It really does. Like that they were attempting to be funny so often in this episode. I'm like, it's an episode about insulting anyone who questions the government, and it ridicules them while it's doing it.
Yeah, and I guess, well, all I can say is that, you know, CBS wanted to make sure that they weren't going to get sued, because certainly CBS knew that this was going down, because it was, I said, at this point, it would have been in the investigation stage already.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm sure they were nervous about some stuff. It wouldn't surprise, they knew a lawsuit was coming. Maybe they didn't want to make the characters have to go through a lawsuit as well. Oh my God.
Also, what they wanted to do is just keep the powers that be, the FBI or whatever. Because the other thing that I discovered later too is that very, very seldom, does the government of California, this is one of the first times they have actually taken over a case.
Gotten into a lawsuit, yeah.
Have taken it over because they really feel that they have more than enough to win this.
Well, so that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Although, we probably don't want to talk about it too much in this episode because it might all be resolved by the time we're talking about this.
Yeah, well, who knows? It'll still
who knows?
Be. Well, that's it's, you know, I mean, lost.
I know. It,
you know how long lawsuits take.
So the funny part is, in the episode, there's actually two really good points they have Zelda Williams make, which is A, it's ridiculous that they have a private plane, and the characters do not mention that enough. Like, how absurd it is that they have a private plane Which again means that there is an FBI agent whose full-time job it is to just wait around to fly them places. Right? That's A. B, she correctly points out that Garcia constantly violates everyone's right to privacy. Always.
Yeah.
Like, constantly. Zelda Williams is 100% right about that.
Yep.
But also in the episode, right, they find a piece of evidence, and it's one of those things where they write a piece of evidence to find a clue, and then later in the episode, and I talk about this a lot, actually, but later in the episode, you find out the twist, and then, but if you think back, you're like, well, then how did that previous clue exist? And in this episode, the two guys who died were talking, and the guy who gets shot is like, I know what they're up to. You know, we got to do something about it. And the other guy's like, maybe we should go to the police. But later in the episode, we found out that he was suspicious that his girlfriend was cheating on him.
Yeah.
And that's what they were talking about. So why would they go to the police?
I know. As I said, the first time you watch this, none of it makes any sense.
But then when you go back and look at it a second time, it's actually worse.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the first run through is, oh, this doesn't make any sense. Second time, my good Lord, how did this get on the air?
Yeah. It's like, just, how did they make an episode this bad?
It's such a mess.
Yeah.
You know, unless at the last minute they had to make changes and didn't know what to do.
Well, I guarantee. I mean, I guarantee, based on how the rest of the season is structured, they fully intended for the team to murder an innocent man and have to deal with the consequences of it.
Yeah.
And them taking that out made them rejigger the whole episode. Yeah. Well, not the whole episode, but every line about suicide, homicide got turned to suicide. And you would have to write a lot of, you know, you'd have to rewrite a bunch of the dialogue between them to talk about how, why should I trust you? The FBI just came in here and started killing members of my community.
Oh, right? And the thing is, this is explains why Lewis actually got so many lines this episode.
Ah.
Right? Because they decided they had a whole bunch of stuff they had to take out. And so they had to fill it with something.
Yeah. And they put in all this Sandy Hook stuff, maybe. Yeah. But it's like, no, they should have killed that guy. Like, this episode, it's still a terrible episode, even if they killed that guy.
Yeah.
But at least it would have served a purpose to the narrative arc of the season. Now it's just the dumbest episode of Criminal Minds ever. And dear Lord, is that saying something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So okay, bad. All right.
Let's finish
So
up.
I guess that's that. What are we going to be doing next week? What is people's homework for episode 1310 to 1312?
And I can only hope, excuse me, as I yawn, I can only hope I will get more engaged in these three episodes, but, you know,
all right, hit
we'll
me. What
see.
Is it?
Submerged.
Which one's that?
Couple living in Ramona, California, killed in their home.
Oh, pirate. Yeah, pirate. Okay, go.
Okay, so we end up with Lou Diamond Phillips, though. That's good.
Pirate episode. We love Lou Diamond. Keep going.
Full Tilt Boogie.
Which one is Full Tilt Boogie?
A Virginian police chief's wife is hospitalized after...
No! The terrible... Oh, God! Them attempting to do an episode about OxyContin. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yes. And I guess...
Every show tries to do an opioid crisis episode, and this is maybe the worst opioid crisis episode.
Well, maybe they should have called in...
Who?
Our opioid...
I don't
specialist.
Know.
JJ's husband.
Oh, yes, exactly, right? He knows.
He knows.
He made
about
a movie
OPS.
About this stuff.
And you'll never guess who wrote them.
Who?
Erica. Erica.
Oh, of course.
And Kristen.
Kristen, obviously. Yeah, no, that Full Tilt Boogie's a bad episode. All right, next.
Yes, and then Bad Moon on the Rise.
The werewolf episode. Oh. Werewolf episode.
That's so
I got
bad.
This confused
oh
with
God,
that.
That's bad.
It's a really bad.
So
really
I mean, I'm
episode.
Just it, now why I remember this episode, I have no idea. But I can actually, I had just flashed through my the entire episode flashed through my brain as I was reading Bad Moon on the Rise and going, oh no. So I may be not checked fully in this week. Okay. Next episode, next week either.
We'll do our best.
I'm spending way too much time in the garden. Anyway.
Yes, the pollen's getting to you. Yeah. All right, so I guess that's that. So if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you have any profiling-related fiction you'd like to recommend we check out, please drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We will see you. Oh, yes, if you're listening to this on a on an app or using some sort of podcatcher program, be sure to give it a review and subscribe to it, because that is how other people find the show. We'll see you back here next week for... No, there's no Tuesday thing going on right now, is there? Oh, no, of course there is.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, Beyond Borders. Oh, my God.
The second season of Beyond Borders.
Yeah. We are hoping you were enjoying suffering through Beyond Borders with us. Luckily, there's like only a week of that left to go. So join back for Beyond Borders on Tuesday. And then we'll see you back here Thursday for the for more of season 13. And until then, I'm going to say au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.